Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midwestern Archaeology Podcast. My name is Lee Strange. Oftentimes, when archaeologists describe past cultures and societies, it can be difficult to picture not only the artifacts, but the people themselves as they would have looked hundreds or thousands of years ago. There are a few select people today that strive to bring those long-gone days to life through art and visual mediums. Today, I am joined by one such archaeologic illustrator, Ren Harvey. Harvey has created countless drawings and illustrations depicting pre-contact artifact and peoples. Part of her process in creating these beautiful illustrations is working closely with both academic and avocational archaeologists to ensure accuracy. The result is something that is both unique and evoking. Ren, thank you very much for being with me today.
Thank you, and thank you for that introduction. I'm proud to be here.
So I wanted to ask you, because you've got an interesting journey that you've been on. So can you tell us a little bit about your early life and when you first became interested in archaeology and history and all of that?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, all right. Tennessee Crossroads did a little TV program on me many years ago talking about this journey, because I've done a little bit of everything, and it's come full circle, which I'll try to explain in bullet points here.
Sure.
I grew up in Paris, Ontario, which was a town of, I think, 4,000 people when I was running around and biking around as a kid. And I was surrounded by cornfields. And I remember there was a creek and there was a pond, and we would run around in these cornfields. And I started like getting an interest in rocks and minerals and fossils, and I'd just be out there for hours looking for that kind of stuff. Well, then one day I found an arrowhead, and like many, I was blown away. And of course, back then you had to go to the library. I kind of knew what it was, but when I was shocked to read how old it was, and that was it. It was over. I mean, there was no more fossils or crystals. I knew I wanted to do archaeology. And the thing that's interesting, a lot of people don't know, but in Ontario, you have to have a license. You cannot pick up artifacts and keep them. It's actually against the law. And is that true now? I'm not 100% sure, but it was when I was in high school. So I spent a year doing survey work with Dr. Fitzgerald at Western University in London, Ontario. And he poured into me. He taught me how to draw survey maps and about debitage and the different types of flakes and points. And because he was almost like a mentor or sponsor, the government gave me a license. And I was the first high school age person to get a license in Ontario. And to keep that license, you have to do an archaeological report. It's got to have numbers and maps, and it needs to be all done properly or you will not be renewed. So it was a big deal. And I have my collection with me here in Tennessee. I let the Royal Ontario Museum know every time I move. They've actually contacted me about 5 years ago. Someone wanted to build on one of my sites from high school. And it's bizarre. Yeah. But you certainly cannot sell artifacts. Holy moly. It's totally against the law. You know, so when I came to the United States, I'm like, this is, but you can just do whatever you want. So it's a bit different in Ontario. But what got me my education was the fact that I was a cross country and track runner. And I actually won a Canada's Best. And I traveled the world junior team. And what happened was there's no scholarships in Canada for sports. I was recruited pretty heavily to come to the US, and my parents didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know what would happen with my life if it wasn't for running. And after a long decision, I decided to go to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And lucky for me, that anthropology, archaeology program was considered outstanding, you know, almost to the level of a Harvard. Mm. And at the time, this is what I was told. So I studied under Dr. O'Shea, and actually did some work for Milford Wolpoff too, human evolution. And I did lithic illustration. I illustrated bones of Neanderthals, and I did all kinds of crazy things. And so, yeah, my archaeology continued at Michigan just because, you know, that's how I was getting my degree. But I also was running at a very, very high level. And, you know, when you're a Division I athlete on scholarship, it's a lot. So, you know, did that, graduated with, back then it was called a cultural anthropology degree with a specialty in archaeology. And then Michigan gave me another year scholarship, and I didn't even have any eligibility. You know, that was probably $30,000 back then. And they let me study scientific illustration at the art school. So Michigan gave me a lot. I mean, they really helped me. And I'll never forget what they've done for me. But what's weird is I ended up being a college coach. So I didn't do any archaeology after college. I became a college coach at the University of Illinois. Funny enough, because of course, there's another amazing archaeology school. And here I am buried. When you're a Division I coach, it's even harder than an athlete. You live and breathe building that program, recruiting, you know, you're traveling all the time. So I did that for 5 years. And then I ended up at another great archaeology school, Florida State. And once again, doing no archaeology, doing no art. I coached for 15 years, but ended up, it's a very hard life. It's a very hard life. If you want to win, you have no life. And I like, but yeah, so I did the college coaching, and actually retired very young from college coaching. And I guess you can say I quit. Yeah, I there was a bunch of things going on that I obviously am not going to put on this podcast, but it just that's not who I am. I'm not going to be part of that. And I don't like winning that bad. So I retired from college coaching in 2015, and I had a friend in Nashville, and I was like, I'm just going to move there. This sounds great. So I did. And then a friend at work said, I got a job, just a mailroom job. And a friend at work goes, hey, I heard you like archaeology and used to collect artifacts. And I said, yeah. He goes, do you want to come out and look for artifacts with me? And I go, yes. And so he took me, and back I go, right back to being in that cornfield as a kid. And as you know, Tennessee is loaded with prehistory and just gorgeous artifacts. So I started doing that. I started hunting artifacts again. And then one day I was like, I should combine my love of artifacts and what I'm learning about Tennessee and make it with art. And I'm like, I don't know that anyone's really doing this. And so I started on that journey. I made that decision. And I mean, I guess that probably really seriously happened in 2017. Yeah. I started going to shows, I think in 2018, artifact shows, and it's just taken off. I mean, it's just, I've met so many people. Right. It's been amazing.
No, that is really interesting. I'm curious. So like when you were going through these episodes of life where you couldn't really do any archaeology, you were too busy as a coach and as an athlete to kind of go out on digs, were you still thinking about it during those years? Were you wishing that you could be getting more involved with?
Nope.
Really?
You are an absolutely, I would say I was a borderline workaholic. I mean, we were winning, and I was paid to win. And being a former elite athlete, I love winning. Like it's just in your blood, you know, but it was a little much. And you're surrounded by that culture, all the other coaches from all the other programs at your university. And it's just, it can be very, very unhealthy. I'm just glad I was smart enough to get out when I did. So yeah, I've never looked back. I know the universe had this plan for me, and I've, you know, I have, this is my purpose, is to bring the ancient people alive again and to help archaeologists, museums, visually show the public what they may have looked like, what they may have worn, mm-hmm. how they may have used these tools, villages, and all this stuff. It's become my purpose.
Whether you're 8 or 80, there's something for everyone at the Archaeological Research Institute. Join a kids' dig, take an immersive tour, learn ancient skills in our experimental lab, or try our virtual reality experiences. ARI makes archaeology accessible, hands-on, and fun for all ages. Come play in the dirt, or just watch others do it. Find programs at exploreari.org. Yeah, and also from an educational perspective, I think illustrations like the ones that you have made are invaluable, especially for kids who, if you list off a bunch of facts, I know this personally because we have a bunch of field trips that come by. It's one thing to just kind of say a bunch of stuff about, you know, the people that lived here, but then to have a visual and to be able to see what we think, you know, something, how they may have used certain objects and on their body and stuff like that. It's very powerful. And so that's why I think not just archaeologic illustrators, but paleontological illustrators and science illustrators. And I just think it's such a cool thing to get into. And I also like to draw a little bit, and it is a little bit of a dream of mine to get into archaeologic illustration as well. So it's also really cool to talk
young.
With you.
You're young.
To hear your experience. Yes.
Good. That's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that.
So you were interested in making art from a young age, I understand, because it kind of seems like you have those two passions, archaeology and creating art, that you kind of had that moment of revelation to kind of cross and combine the two. But before that, what was your path as an artist and as an illustrator? Was it just kind of something you did in your free time? And what was that journey like?
I know I was drawn to cartoons. I would say I was a cartoonist for a very long time. Even in high school, my art teachers would push me to get away from cartoons. And they're still on my Facebook today. They comment on all my posts, my art teachers from high school. I mean, they were
so sweet.
Oh my gosh. And I mean, I'm old. I'm 53, you know, and they're on my Facebook, and I just think back to them, and I remember them pushing me to quiet down the cartoonish look of my realistic work. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, it was hard on me. I remember feeling like they're being pretty hard on me. But thank God they did it. They pushed me. They pushed me to be able to do both. And I can today do both. And I studied scientific illustration at Michigan, but it was like literally one class or two classes.
Right.
My art background comes from my high school teachers in Paris, Ontario, and YouTube. Mm. I learned so much from artists that I respect, and I will watch them do an entire painting. I will watch them do graphite work, and the ones I really respect, I don't watch everybody. I mean, no one has time for that. But I always tell people, you can do a lot from YouTube. You don't have to go to art school. Now, if someone's a serious artist, I wish I had gone to art school, and I would recommend it. If you can, but if you can't and you're later on in life, watch YouTube, find your favorite artists and, you know, try to learn their technique or watch how they're mixing colors. And, you know, between my art teachers and YouTube, this is, and obviously thousands of hours of practice. My art is, I mean, without tooting my own horn, I know my art gets better every year because of all of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was curious. So after you kind of finished your career in sports and athletics, did you have a moment where you had to kind of start, not necessarily start from scratch, but were you making art during those years when you were coaching and as an athlete, or did you kind of have to start from square one a little bit? Really?
Yeah. I mean, I obviously did. Okay, so at Michigan, I did lots of art. I illustrated lithics. Like I said, I worked on three textbooks, Milford Wolpoff, on human evolution. Yeah. I was working for McGraw-Hill Publishing, as a sophomore in college.
Wow.
And I don't even know wow. how I got that lucky. I did forensic reconstructions for Dr. Milford Wolpoff of a Neanderthal and some Chinese Homo sapiens. And not many people had ever done that back in the 90s.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It was, I mean, I've been very, it's just so interesting to me that I spent 15 years coaching, doing next to no artwork. I'm telling you, next to none. And then all of a sudden, I'm right back doing what I love again. You know, finding artifacts. I still go out in Middle Tennessee and try to recover some, you know, knowing they're going to get broke eventually by something. You know, I go to all these artifact shows. I have met so many collectors, heard so many incredible stories. I do know one of the turning points for me was meeting Stephen Cooper, who is the editor of the Central States magazine. And he took a big interest in it, was wonderful, and really mentored me along. And he introduced me, told me about Dr. Kevin Smith, he passed away actually when I was at the Collinsville show. I left early. I couldn't be there. Anyways, Dr. Kevin Smith, I remember where I was when he called me for the first time. And I'm like, this man is like one of the greatest archaeologists there is. And he is talking to me right now. And it was a big damn deal.
I
was freaking out. And he's like, I've been looking for someone like you. And I'm like, what? And he really took me under his wing. And I could ask him all kinds of questions about the Mississippians. And then he introduced to Dr. Robert Sharp and Dr. David Dye. And I was in the room with all three of them, I think in 2018. And I was like, someone freaking pinched me. Like, what? That they're talking to this squirrely former Division I coach, this crazy artist. And I'm a very lucky person that they even talk to me. And so anyways, you know how it is when you're networking and, you know, I start trying to get other archaeologists and anthropologists to talk to me. And if I tell them, hey, listen, these three guys, all of a sudden they think you're credible. Like, and it built, you know, and I've had incredible opportunities ever since. So yeah, there's no way the universe is not aligning this for me because I've been very lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious. So kind of focusing or turning our focus more to your subjects themselves that you are creating and drawing. So what do you really like to focus on when it comes to the things that you choose to draw about? And is there a particular region of the country that you like to keep your archaeological illustrations to, or is it more broad or more general?
I think it's mostly been the Midwest, Southeast. I've not done anything for the West yet, but yeah, my favorite things to draw are humans. I love to do portraits. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But when those
your portraits are beautiful.
Thank you. I love doing it because they come alive. All of a sudden you're in the studio which is my tiny apartment, but there's hardly anywhere, there's nowhere to sit really. So if you were to visit, bring a chair. I just have art tables everywhere. But
that's awesome.
I love the human face, the challenge of it, and the stories that can come through those eyes to the viewer. And no matter what, you connect with a portrait because it is another human face and there's connection there. And that's a big thing. But when I can combine a portrait with ancient tattoos that we think, you know, the Hopewell, the Adena, the Mississippians, we think they had ancient, you know, what did they look like? And, you know, archaic, they're wearing a slate gorget. And, you know, when I can combine the artifacts and the knowledge that you know, today, 2025, we believe that is wicked.
Yeah.
That is very special to me. I am working on eventually being able to do more site reconstructions. I don't get a lot of requests for those. I may have some from your institute. I'm going to be chatting with Liz.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm willing to do that work and learn. But yes, I've still lives of artifacts, you know, the collectors out there just love if you will paint or draw their favorite arrowhead. I mean, it's like their pet.
Oh, nice.
It's like a Labrador, you know, like they are.
Yeah.
And I see, and they share some of the most incredible stories and photos with me. And they're so proud of this piece that they're, you know, keeping and they share this stuff with me, and it's so special. And they're so excited to have me do this still life of their artifacts. Mm-hmm. It's a great honor to do that.
History isn't just in the books. It's in the soil, the stones, and the stories of your region. Join ARI's regional archaeological tours and explore hidden sites, historic landscapes, and the places where history happened, led by real archaeologists filled with real discoveries. See the land like you've never seen it before. Check out our tour dates at exploreari.org.
That's awesome. Yeah, you've mentioned a few of the cultures that ARI particularly studies, the Hopewell and also Fort Ancient. But I was also drawn to your illustrations of Adena artifacts because I feel like not a ton of people, at least in my own anecdotal experience, have not heard of the Adena, but there's some really interesting artifacts that they made. I think my favorite of yours that I saw was the Adena plate, like the Adena tablet. That one is really, really cool. Me and one of my friends / coworkers spent hours talking about the Adena tablets. Such an interesting group of artifacts that there's not a lot of context for. We don't know much about them, but they're very intriguing.
Well, get ready because there's a book coming out. Jason Pentrell, he is on the Seven Ages podcast. Jason Pentrell. That tablet, the painting of that tablet, is going on the cover of his book. I was hoping he was going to have it done in time for the show, but it's going to come out. Last time I spoke to him, it was going to come out late fall. But he's written a book on the Paleo-Indian people, too. He's brilliant. And me to do this painting with red ochre. He wanted red ochre on it, on that tablet. And I'm like, oh, heck yeah, the Adena. I mean, they remind me a lot of the Hopewell. They were so ceremonial with their effigies. And can you imagine being at one of these ceremonies and what they were like, the dances and the chants and, I want to draw all of it. Like I know.
Yes, no, and I can't wait for the day that you do because I will be very much looking forward to that. Well, because the Adena, they are kind of thought to be, at least like the Ohio tradition of mound building, the first to kind of do it. And then obviously the Hopewell came after them. But Great Serpent Mound, which I don't know if you've ever been over there. It's super cool, very beautiful. It's not super far away. I think it's in Southern Ohio, but that's thought to be kind of an Adena associated site. So definitely really, really cool. You also mentioned the Mississippians as well. So where with these kind of cultures that you're drawing on, that you're hoping to depict, What are your sources that you draw on for kind of inspiration about what you are portraying, but then also like factually, what do you kind of draw on? Because I understand that there are some like colonial era accounts, like historic accounts that you also draw on as well, like illustrations and stuff.
Yeah, well, I did recently, well, not recently, good Lord, when was that? 2019? No, it came out 2020. I did a book with Helen Roundtree, and of course it was launched during COVID, so forget there to be any book launch at all. We were going to have a book launch ceremony on Roanoke Island, where This book was on the Croatan and the Lost Colony, which is a big fabled myth as to where the British colony went. And anyone can research the Lost Colony. I'm not going to go into details about it. But that was the more historic one that I've not done any. No, I've just recently done another historic one. Well, John White was an artist from Britain, and he came over because the Queen wanted to colonize the New World, and this was 1584, and so before Jamestown, and they came over, I think, on one boat, I'm not quite sure, but he was to, quote, draw the savages, and he wasn't even a trained artist, but there's no iPhone. How you need to show the Queen what they were wearing, what did their ceremonies look like, just all the stuff we're still interested in today. And so I studied these watercolors from 1584, still exist. They're in the British Museum. Unbelievable details that they show for an untrained artist. And I worked with Helen Rowntree. She's an anthropologist. And we made the people in those paintings look more native. He had really kind of like jacked up their faces. And, you know, the one lady had two left feet and in his painting.
Oh.
So, yeah, there was a bunch of stuff that, yeah, we used her knowledge of the people and maybe what he was trying to tell us, but made it more crystal clear and made them look more native. And I did 12 watercolors for her in that book. And then just recently, I did something very similar for the Grand Village. There is a brand new Grand Village for the Natchez people. It is opening 2026 fall. And they contacted me because they saw my John White paintings. And they're like, this is someone that can take the engravings of the French explorers, which also made the native people look like Mongols. I mean, I don't even know. They didn't even look like they had real faces. And so, and the Natchez people also said, this isn't right. This isn't right. And so I talked to Natchez scholars, the chief of the Natchez people. I was so nervous. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm sweating.
Wow.
And he was like on a Zoom call, like pulling out, like, this is what this would have looked like items of clothes and colors. And so I worked with all these people for months on three paintings and I delivered them. Actually, I met them just past Memphis and delivered these paintings, and those paintings will be in the museum next year. I mean, just freaking so.
Oh my gosh.
By that.
That's amazing.
To, you know, have the Natchez people be like, this is how we looked. You know, I know that those engravings were from the 1700s, but this is how we looked. You know, we don't want those engravings hung in our new museum. We want these. And I'm like, oh, no pressure. And I think something that your listeners will be very interested in is something I'm working on at this very moment. Mm. In fact, 10 minutes before the call, I just finished one drawing. I am working with Dr. David Dye from University of Memphis on recreating the Spirit Lodge at Spiro in Oklahoma.
Wow.
And I know I feel a massive amount of pressure when I even think about this. So Spiro, I have listened to Dr. Kent Riley for years. He, you know, Mississippian archaeology guru, Eric Singleton, anyone about Spiro, any YouTube, any podcast, I've heard it all, probably several times. And then Dr. Dye said he's creating this
dedication.
Oh, I'm a nut. I'm a crazy nut about Spiro. And I've told everyone about it. They just look at me like they're not. I try to get people interested, you know.
Okay, but. No, I have recently been made aware of this site, and I have to say the pottery that I've seen from the site is crazy. It's so cool, and also just what it's so interesting. So sorry, not.
Oh, it's
not
basically King Tut's tomb. And they literally put that in the newspaper in the 1930s. And, you know, if anyone's listening to this, you need to like search Spiro on YouTube and go into it. Cause like the artifacts that came out of it you know, it was the way it was discovered and all that. It's not the greatest fun story. We can't go back in time and stop this from happening. It happened. It was during the Depression. And
the guys did it.
They literally, they were not archaeologists. They dug into the side of the mountain. They were looking to sell.
Oh, I see.
Or because they were.
Sell stuff. Yeah.
People were desperate to feed their families, you know, and but. You know, Dr. Ken O'Reilly, if you listen to his YouTubes, his lectures, he talks about all of this. He tells the stories. He has passed away and fairly recently. So here I am getting this email from Dr. Dye saying, I'm doing a manuscript on the Spirit Lodge for the Journal of Ethnohistory. And so he's and he goes, I need you to illustrate all the, how many is it, six deities that were in the Spirit Lodge.
And wow.
I believe that no one is allowed to use photographs of artifacts. Like, I don't know if you know that. There's something going on with the tribal office and the quote-unquote rules and laws. So here, I said to Dr. Dye, I'm like, I know that's like horrible, but for me, I'm like, I'm right here. I'll do it. I've already been doing it. You know, I'll draw those pipes. And here I am. You know, I finished Red Horn. The Red Horn pipe is done. I did three different views of it. I did the vulture pipe, which I've actually seen in person. Those were both in the Spirit Lodge. I just finished Corn Mother. Right before I came on for this recording, Corn Mother was in the center of the lodge. And so we're doing, and I've got Turtle Man to do, who is doing a human sacrifice on this pipe. He's literally cutting off some guy's jaw in a sculpture on a pipe. Yeah. Like, these people were brilliant. And then the last one is the three cedar statues that were on the east side. One is considered first man, and the other two are considered the twins, the hero twins. So once all these black and white drawings are done of all these different views, the hardest part is coming, that he wants me to do a color painting of inside the Spirit Lodge and what it would have looked like. And it is going to be the biggest challenge of my life because the thing was full.
Yeah. For your imagining kind of rendering of that space, what exactly are you drawing on? Like, how are you recreating that space, or how are you planning to recreate that space?
I'm still working on that. I probably fall asleep thinking about it. I wake up thinking about it. But yeah, I have Dr. Dye's manuscript. I have James Brown's manuscript. They're both very much in alignment as to how these objects were in the Spirit Lodge, because no photographs were taken. It was like descriptions from the miners, quote unquote, from 1930s, and what was left and not destroyed when the archaeologists came in. So you have years of people trying to figure out, is this exactly how it was placed in the Spirit Lodge? What does it mean? We have photographs of some of the tapestries that survived, the brilliant vibrant colors, 600-year-old tapestries. There was baskets, gallons of pearls. 100 shell cups. I mean, I can go on and on, like stone maces, woodpecker axes. I'm telling you, it was like King Tut's tomb. It was full of their most prized, powerful possessions, because they were trying to restart the dawn of time. They were suffering from years and years of drought. People were dying. Crops were failing. And they all came together to recreate time. That's how desperate they were. And here they brought their very best of everything. And it's just, holy crap. I mean, just thinking about, they're very complex people. Very complex. We say they're ancient, and we hardly know anything. Think about, there's next to no wood that's been Can you imagine what they carved out of wood and made out of wood? Incredible things. So yeah, Spiro, please look it up. Please, please.
It was kind of a little bit on my radar, but now after this ringing endorsement, I'm going to go full tilt Spiro. Yeah, if there's anyone that you know specifically that I could interview about Spiro Mounds, that would be really cool because I would love to get like a...
Highly recommend Dr. Dye. He is... His brain is ginormous. I mean, the man is brilliant.
Okay.
And also, he's an archaeologist. He's done all kinds of field work and data. But guess who else he studies? The tribes today. He studies the cultural tribes today and historically. And that's how he's been able to decipher the Mississippian world, because he's talking to elders and he's piecing all this together. That's how Dr. Kevin Smith was too. Not all archaeologists get into connecting the today's tribes and elders and the distant past, but there is a connection. Of course, you need to be really smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I know other archaeologists. I can give you more names later that I think would be great interviews for you for different time periods and stuff.
Yeah.
But of course, I'm working with him right now on this project, so I wanted to mention him.
At ARI, we identify, preserve, and responsibly explore archaeological sites in southeast Indiana, southwestern Ohio, and northern Kentucky. Our volunteers are one of the driving forces behind this mission, from participating in archaeological digs, assisting in lab work, artifact processing, and supporting field trips and fundraising. Every role helps us move forward. With just a one-hour training, you'll gain new skills, meet new people, enjoy nature, and make a real impact. Volunteering with ARI means joining a community passionate about history and preserving it for generations to come. Join us at ARI, be a part of history, be a part of the future.
For sure. Well, I think, okay, so this is kind of something that I was kind of thinking as we were talking. It seems like your work kind of draws on so many different parts of this world that they're studying. So you've got avocational archaeologists, you've got academic archaeologists, and then of course you have the native descendants and the tribes themselves that you are kind of all drawing on. And I feel like that is just kind of a great model for how archaeology and how we should imagine the past. We should be drawn on all of these kind of sources of knowledge to kind of understand and imagine and enrich our own lives by learning more about it. So I just think that's really cool.
Thank you. I really enjoy it. And, you know, it's been a lot of years and a lot of work. And, you know, I live a pretty simple life, as you know, and here, starving artists, it's a real thing, you know. And luckily for me, I can live in 740 square feet and it doesn't even bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. And I'm not a material person. And so because it's just me and my dog, I've been able to do this. And I quit my job. I was working two jobs. I was working in a mailroom 30 hours a week. And then I was doing art until I went to bed. And I would do art on weekends and, you know, and I'm like, geez, I'm not getting any younger. I don't really love this. And, you know, I'm turning down commission after commission. Yeah. I can't keep up. And so I eventually sold my condo and used the proceeds of my condo to just kind of help me do like really focus on art for now. And it's going great. And I am very grateful.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's, and it's also very inspirational too. I think it's really amazing the journey that you've been on. I want to respect your time. You know, we're getting close to an hour. So I'll just close with one more question, which kind of already answered regarding your Spirit Lodge project, but is there anything that we can be on the lookout for that Ren Harvey's doing, or just social medias? Like, what's the best place to see your art and experience what you've got going on?
Well, I'm excited to work with your institute. Got a list of possible projects. Yeah, that Liz sent me. And I, you know, part of me wishes I lived a lot closer to Lawrenceburg, because I would just be there all the time. Mm. Y'all are like the coolest people, you know? I met so many of you last year at the Artifact Show. And I love what you're doing for the youth and just your awareness. Mm. And just everything is so professionally done. I've been very impressed. And maybe I should move there. I don't know.
Thank you.
Maybe I should.
Hey, I mean, it's not a bad place to be. You're right by the Ohio.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So I've got a list of drawings that I'd like to work with your institute on, and that's definitely coming up. And then I have the Kentucky Dam Artifact Show, which is November 8th. Mm. Wait a minute. 7th, 8th, and 9th. And I'm going to be painting a man smoking the beaver pipe, which is considered one of the most exquisite artifacts ever recovered. And I am reading Perino's book right now on more about the grave that pipe was found in, so I could learn a little bit more maybe about who this man was, how he may have looked. That's big on my radar, is that pipe, and probably a lot more hope stuff coming. I do need to do Fort Ancient. I really haven't done a lot of Fort Ancient. So, I mean, the sky's the limit. Whatever the universe sends my way, I'm hoping I can tackle it. But yeah, the color is a massive, like, hopefully I won't have a nervous breakdown trying to figure out how to.
No. I'm sure you're going to do great.
I have to do it. It doesn't matter if I get worried, scared, or overwhelmed. It the universe has aligned this, and I really, in honor of Dr. Kent Riley alone, I need to do it, and I'm honored to do it.
When can we expect that project to kind of wrap up and be available to see?
Well,
that might be a little bit of a scary question.
Yeah. Well, the best way to view my art is on Facebook. I don't have a webpage.
Okay.
It's just R-E-N Harvey, Ren Harvey. You won't see any political posts. You may see my dog once in a while, but it's just my art, occasionally an artifact I found. So that's the best way to follow my work. You will see my spiral drawings on there. But as far as the painting of the Spirit Lodge, I definitely by the end of the year, I have to. Because Dr. Dye needs it. So I would say definitely by the end of the year. And because now we've talked about it. I've read about it, but we haven't like talked about the painting itself yet. Painting of that magnitude is probably going to be 60 to 70 hours. And it will be a big canvas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Golly.
It deserves more than that, but I'm going to give it all I have.
I look forward to it being completed and to see what kind of comes from the collaboration between you and ARI. Very much excited about that.
Me too.
So thank you so much, Ren,